Hi, everybody. My name is Thomas Voulon from the Atlanta Opera, and I'm so excited to have this reunion. I've been looking forward to it for a while. We have the cast, the amazing cast of Pagliacci with us. Thalys Trovin, who sang Nedda, Meg Marino, who sang Beppe, Trace Meagher, Arcanio, Reggie Smith, Artonio, and Joseph Latanzi, our Silvio, are here. Exactly 3 months after opening night, we open on October 22nd. Today is January 22nd. I was thinking about that today, so it's so nice to see all of you. I think we closed on November 15th, so I haven't seen you since then. And it's really nice to be back. We are gathered to talk a little bit about Pagliacci because, as you know, the Atlanta Opera launched a really exciting initiative called the Spotlight Media, where we are broadcasting the films that we created this fall, the operas that we created, Love Letters to Atlanta, which are songs sung by a company of players that celebrate iconic places in Atlanta. And soon it's also going to have a series that Ryan McKinney has created called Orfano Mondo, named after the monologue of Tonio in Pagliacci. So just before we start this conversation, I want to share my screen for 1 second so that we can show what this Spotlight Media is all about. Some cool stuff there. Thanks to Felipe Baral, our amazing videographer, filmmaker, resident filmmaker, who's been with us for a couple of years now. And this week is a special week because Pagliacci is finally going to be released. So far, we've released Kaiser from Atlantis. And I don't know if you all read the Wall Street Journal review that came out yesterday. It was pretty nice for Felipe and the organization. And we look forward to sharing Pagliacci with the world in the next couple of days. Now, before we start our conversation, I want to share my screen one more time to kind of remind you all of a very special evening that we had at the Atlanta Opera in one of the performances of Pagliacci. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that moment.
The one part that you don't see is Joseph lying on the floor and we're both like shoulder shimming because we're trying not to like laugh. And he's lying on the floor and I'm trying to be devastated. And he gives me a
You know, that's cool. And you get a gold star. But the person I'm wondering about is Reggie, because Reggie is standing on stage and he's about to say, very dramatically, after this, la commedia è finita. How the hell did you not crack up? Even Siri did not get this up.
Oh my goodness. How I don't know, because I was looking right at her. I thought, okay, just take a beat. take a breath.
Where is she? Get her on this Zoom call.
Absolutely. She was in it.
Tonight. She was so happy to be back at the theater.
That's
we
awesome.
Need more of that.
I'd want more of that. Totally. That's great.
authentic reactions, man. That means we did a good job.
I mean, what I love about it, because I listened to it at least 20 times, is that she goes, like, she sees that you just shot Silvio. She looks at Kanye. She sees you just shot Silvio, and she goes, oh. Oh. And then she goes, oh, my God, everybody dies. And it's just so perfect. I'll never forget that. Life before.
Classic.
But Reggie, you mentioned that you have a dream. You have a goal in life. And you talked a little about Richard Tucker. You want to tell us about this?
Oh, the Vickers clip?
The Vickers, not Richard Tucker. Yeah.
So there's a great clip of John Vickers singing, I think it's Valcuta. And someone in the audience is just hacking up a lung. You can hear them on the recording. And in the middle of the opera, he's like, shut up with your damn coughing. And then just goes right back into singing as if nothing has ever happened. So I said, that was almost my reaction to this lady. Shut up with your damn talking. La Comedia
Infinita. That would be cool.
Well, I'm glad as the general director that you held yourself back and did not say that. That you got major points for that.
Oh, just trying to be like John Vickers, man.
Exactly. Good luck with that. That's good. Well, again, so excited to see all of you. It's been like the most incredible few weeks of our lifetime. I mean, think about how much has transpired since we didn't see each other on November 15, and how much more hope there is in this world right now, right? We are on January 22nd. We have a new administration as of a couple of days ago. There's a vaccine. The world is a little different, and there's great hope. And so seeing all of you makes my day, and I'm just happy. I want to talk a little bit about the show and start with each one of you and ask you a couple of questions. And I want to start with Meg Marino, because you actually start the show, right? I mean, we built this idea that some of it is the memory of Beppe. And on October 22nd, which was opening night, you are the first person actually to open this festival, to sing the first words. And you had this interaction with the audience as if you're seeing an audience for the first time. And I'm just curious as to how did it feel? This is October 22nd, at least 7 months after our last interaction with audience. And when I think about this evening, you know, there's this saying that when you make love for the last time, you don't know that you make love for the last time. And so when we all did a performance back in March or whatever that was, February, our last performance, we didn't know that we were having a performance for the last time. How did it feel for you to have that minute that we built into it, connect with the audience, and have this come out of your body, this beautiful sound?
I didn't know, actually. I hadn't thought that I was the first person to make a noise, but I guess I was. And that just kind of got me. I mean, it was just to walk out there and to awkwardly have that little silent moment of just looking around at them and have them staring back at me and be like, holy crap. These are people in an audience right now. Just that first realization of like, what are we doing? Holy moly. And then, but then to see them, like, I was coming to Pagliacci, but apparently we're going to get a little Kurt Vile intro here and just really going with it. You know what I mean? Just immediately like, okay, cool. I'm there. Let's go on the journey. I'm with you. But also, I didn't know that I was the first person to make a face hole sound in the whole festival. That's really cool.
A face hole sound?
Oh, sorry. But yeah, well, yeah, right? Well,
that's so great.
It was a very emotional moment. It, you know,
so emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, go ahead, Tomer, please. Yeah,
I'm just curious as to your thoughts.
It's just a feeling, you know? Like, so, I mean, gosh, at the risk of whatever, but that's just how we are and who we are. Enhanced, whatever. Pretty religious, I think. The entire experience was pretty religious, you know, because a lot of the people, the first time that they, it was their first time hearing a face hole noise for the first time live in a while, you know, in that audience too. And you think to some of the Southern traditions in particular, where they would go around and they'd set up these big tents and they'd have these revivals and things like that. What are we doing? We're taking our religion to these folks and giving them a space that they can worship with us in that way. You know, so I don't know. It just feels so much bigger than a regular old get on the stage and do the thing. I don't have very good words for it. I'm sure you guys have better words for it.
I don't think so. I think, you know, this whole experience, what was so special about it was that so often it was not just the show that we were putting together, but the fact that you guys as artists were putting this show despite everything. That this cliche of the show must go on, which is what Pagliacci is about, was the ethos of this company of players. And by the way, all of you are part of our company of players. And the idea that despite everything, in a tent, in a pandemic, we're doing this was so palpable. And that leads me to Reggie, which in his monologue, in his prologue, you basically says, you point at the audience at some point when you say, Evoy, and you all, don't look at our costumes, don't look at those fancy costumes, look at our heart, because we are artists and we are flesh and blood. And just like you, the audience, we are going through the same darkness in this orphan world, orfano mondo. And when I'm watching the film, and I've watched it quite a few times as we're editing it, I was trying to think about you, Reggie. And as an artist, out of work, basically, since the beginning of the pandemic, not knowing about what the future holds, which, you know, so many of us are still like not knowing almost a year afterwards. How did it feel as an artist to sing that specific role, those specific words?
Well, you know, it's really, well, singing the aria itself is always an exciting moment. It was also interesting because, you know, the last job that I had was with the Atlanta Opera. Who knew that, you know, I was on my way to the theater for Porgy and, you know, we got a call saying that things weren't happening. And, you know, you think, well, that's just here in Atlanta. The next gig will be fine. And then the next gig and the next gig. So also being able to come back home and to go back to sort of where it sort of stopped was a very interesting moment for me. But singing and then having to put on the mask, coming out of the box, if you will, was another sort of thing for people to see that we are doing exactly what you're doing. We still have to live this reality, even though we're here on the stage. I thought it was a great personification of what the opera is about in general. How we still have to put on our mask, we still have to do all of the things, we still have to endure this pandemic, even though we're doing a show for you. One of the things that I mentioned to a friend about the pandemic in general is how singers were often called upon to be the encouragers. We're called on to sing at funerals and weddings and all these things to make other people happy. But so many artists have had to deal with their own feelings and emotions during this pandemic and take a moment to say, you know what? This has been rough. This has been hard on us, but we can get through it. So we've had to learn to encourage ourselves through this process. And I think that's part of what he does in the aria, is he's always, in a sense, encouraging himself that I can get through this, we all can get through this, by showing that we are all flesh and blood. We all have beating hearts, and we're all humans that go through the same thing. So I don't know. I thought it was a really beautiful moment, and the aria has a different meaning for me now than it did certainly before the show.
And I think it's for all of us after watching this. You know, the other part of it is that the films that we're releasing, Kaiser from Atlantis and Pagliacci, are basically the show that you guys performed, shot in the very distinct style of Felipe Barral, who is really getting into the stage and into the faces of the singers. It's really thrilling. But what Ryan McKinney is doing is a very different take on it. And he's taking you guys as artists and he's coupling it with the actual show so that, you know, life imitates art and art imitates life a little bit, and about the struggle that all of us went through in this orphan world during this time and are still going through. So I can't wait for you to see what he's done. It's really thing. Now, you mentioned Paul Haendes.
And he's asked a question,
and though. You mentioned that last production that you've done. Go ahead.
Oh, I need to ask a question about one of the angles of Felipe's filming, because we just were talking about Reggie's aria. Did he at any point get a behind Reggie shot for his aria? Because that man, one of my favorite things about my staging was watching his lungs expand. It's the coolest thing. That man, it's like watching wings unfurl. I mean, the coolest. I know that's so, no, but like that is the coolest. You could teach a masterclass of breathing just by literally watching your back. It was incredible. Sorry.
Well,
I had to put that in there because I looked forward to it every single night. I was always like, whoa, Reggie, how far are you going to expand them wings tonight? You know, the things you're thinking on stage, you know, in these beautiful moments. Like, is he going to do it?
Felipe got some amazing shots, and that's the great thing about him is that he's fearless and shameless when it comes to personal space, which is why the videos are so cool. You know, like my first time of working with Felipe, I was, I think, directing Out of Darkness, and he came into my face. It almost felt like he was getting into my nostrils and into my brain. I was like, whoa, 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 wait a second. But then I realized when I saw the footage that it's so moving what he's doing, because it's psychological. It gets into your world. So it's, but I was just starting to say about the last performance of Reggie was Porgy and Bess, which was also the last performance of Therese Trovin and her triumphant debut as Bess at the Atlanta Opera. And one of the great moments during this dark time for me was the performance that we canceled on Friday the 13th of Porgy and Bess. When all of us gathered on stage, we probably should not have gathered, but we did. And it was so beautiful because Musa, I can never pronounce his last name, the wonderful Musa, who was the second cast Porgy, never got to sing his Porgy and Bess in Atlanta because he was second cast to Morris Robinson. And the whole cast gathered around him. And he just started singing, "Oh Lord, I'm on my way," in a performance that was canceled just for the cast and for the staff. And it's a moment that I'll never forget. But Talise, here you are. You just made your debut at the Atlanta Opera. The world goes into an abyss for months and months and months. And in July, you get this phone call from this crazy guy who's saying, "Hey, how do you feel about joining a company of players here in Atlanta and doing a show in a tent?" And how did you, first of all, what were you thinking? And how did it feel to get this phone call with this offer in the middle of this pandemic?
Well, I do actually remembering one of the first things that I said to you was, you know, had you called me 2 days earlier, we'd be having a different conversation. But literally, it was really strange. I mean, well, first of all, just to even be leaving Atlanta, and actually, I actually made Atlanta officially my home literally 3 months to the date of us closing that show. And then we were actually in Atlanta. And I was just like trying to manage getting my son situated, being in school in two states, kind of, sort of, not really knowing my neighborhood. And then all of a sudden, a year and a half worth of contracts were postponed or canceled. And I thought, okay, I didn't plan for that in this move. But one of the things that the time off taught me was just to, you know, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. You can only control the controllable. And for me as the Virgo and the OCD person in the group, that's been probably the biggest lesson that I've learned. So when you rang, I mean, we really hadn't fleshed out anything, but I just thought, you know, maybe it's fortuitous that I just like really like literally in the middle of the night jumped into this production, closed down. Now I'm living in Atlanta. So it makes perfect sense that I start singing back again in my hometown. I mean, it's actually the one thing that I've never had the luxury of doing, which is singing in my hometown. I mean, we all live somewhere, but we work everywhere else in the world. So, I liked that idea. I really love Atlanta, and in more ways than one, I've been embraced so wholeheartedly here in Atlanta, and especially with the arts community, that I felt it important to not only, in a way, in my tiny way, give back to my colleagues by being a part of the experiment to how do we get back to work. But I wanted to do it in my hometown and a company that I love with my friends. I mean, I was like, I mean, this is probably the best that it's going to get in the worst of times. So it made sense. You know, I have so many friends that are still, I mean, just struggling every day to put the day to day together. So I feel like it's really important to be a part of, I mean, because we are literally the only company doing full live productions. And I think it's important for us to set the example that it can be done, so there can be no more excuses. I mean, there was a time when we've never thought of like putting anything like digital content. What is that? No. It has to be a grand piano in a theater. So with a gown, you know, and changes. So the fact that we are moving the art form forward, which I have always thought was crucial in our industry, it's really, I feel really important to be a part of that, of the how we get there. So I was all in. I mean, I'm here, I'm seeing more baseball, and I'm making art with friends. So there's a win-win.
And you're in the most beautiful city. I really believe it. I used to say it because I was running a company in the city. I didn't really realize how great the city is until I really lived here for a while, and how great the people and how they embrace you and how beautiful it is outdoors.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Love letters to Atlanta. Trace Mager. Fiction is the lie through which we tell the truth. I love that. And that's exactly what happened with Pagliacci. You're playing this guy who's dying of COVID. That's the twist, right? Canio has COVID. He's dying of COVID. He ends up dying on stage. Spoiler alert. And art imitates life and vice versa. We already talked about that cliche. But you're calling us one day, a day before a performance. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, I remember very well.
Hey, I have some symptoms. I have some symptoms. I don't know. My throat is scratching. I don't know. I'm going to get a test. But you need to find a replacement because I may have COVID. So here you are playing. My internet connection is unstable. My daughter is singing, by the way, upstairs. I don't know if you hear her. She's 18 months and she's singing Twinkle Twinkle. So I apologize. But here you are playing a guy dying of COVID-19 and an artist dying of COVID-19. And here you are worried that you have COVID-19 and you may have to cancel. What went on in your mind?
Yeah, it was a very interesting experience, because I think that week we had done two shows already, and this was going to be the last show of the week. And the show prior, it was cold and it was raining, and the weather was just, you know, you do what you got to do when it's showtime. And so we pulled through, and I think the weather, of course, it actually kind of helped. The weather got really bad right when everything started happening at the end of the Commedia. And then the next morning I wake up and I'm like, oh, I feel so good, man. Getting out of bed's a lot harder than it normally is. And my throat kind of hurt. And at first, you know, most of the time when you're in shows, at least I'm like, oh, well, it's fine. You know, like get up and start singing. But in this time, that didn't seem right. You know, you want to be so super transparent and let everybody know what's going on. And I drove all around Georgia. I went to Rock Mart, which is not too close to Atlanta, to get a rapid test because at that time it was difficult to get a rapid test. And so I was very lucky that I received many COVID negatives that day. I think I ended up getting 3 or 4 tests. Just to be extra precautious, because you're going to be screaming in people's faces. You have to really know. And the other thing, you know, I just thought it was so funny because recently I had done a Bohem cover run, and the girl who was singing Mimi was just hacking up a lung in between everything that she sang. And I was like, that's got to be so difficult to be pretending that you're dying of consumption on stage. And then you have to sing, you know, some of the most difficult and gorgeous music there is. And surely enough, a year later, I'm like, as much as I'm practicing singing, I'm practicing coughing and singing.
It's amazing. And just to close the circle, you, the next day, which was the performance day, you called us and you said, I'm all right. I'm okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was just a
tenor.
You know, we voces get very, very sensitive to
the
weather.
It was a tenor morning.
Yes.
You know, the funny thing that I will say is we said, you know what, we're so focused on being, you know, mindful about this pandemic and COVID-19 that we forget. I was like, wait a minute. We forget that we wake up in another city and there's allergies, there are colds. I mean, we're outside and it's amazing. You know what I mean? But all of that stuff, which also leads me to my thought that a lot of it is psychological, because no one's gotten the cold.
Yeah.
No one's gotten COVID. No one's had a cold, really. No one's had any severe allergies. I'm amazed at how those things have like dissipated to the side in this time. Mm-hmm. Because we're still focused on stuff like, maybe it's that we're being healthier. I don't know. Maybe it's that we're keeping distance.
It's the avocados. I think it's an avocado day.
Hand washing.
Hand washing. That's what it is.
We're finally doing what we're supposed to do.
Wash your hands.
But yeah, you can imagine, though, what it is to be on the receiving side of the phone call when you go, I can't sing Kanye tomorrow. And I'm going, well, I guess I'm flying a cover from New York. And then the next day, oh, it's just a scratch in the throat. And I'm like, thank God. Okay, I don't care that I got this other wonderful guy who flew in from New York, but at least you don't have COVID. I mean, the stress that we went through trying to make sure that everybody's safe was intense, but it was so worth it at the end, because this company went through it without an outbreak. And that is the greatest, present we got. Now, Monsieur Latanzi,
yes.
Here you are singing the heroic role of Silvio, this guy who normally gets to fondle the girl and get close to her, this beautiful romantic love duet, and you're supposed to do that with a mask on, COVID days, bachami. How do you bachami in COVID days? How did it feel? Because this is a role that you knew you sang.
I had never sung it before. No,
never sung it before. But you fondled girls before on stage. As a
I mean, that's, I have, and right, you, not just girls. Yeah, right,
there you go. Not just girls.
People.
It's like, you know, no touching is the COVID world. And God, I hope I'm not getting in politically correctness mess because I'm saying those things. By the way, editing is always possible. But seriously, when you think about this, what is the challenge of singing in COVID? Because opera is an art about getting close to people and loving them and touching them and being together. And that's what human beings are about too, which is why we're connecting to opera. And here we are, we can't do all those things. How did it feel for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a way that I was lucky because I didn't have like a physical comparative experience. I wasn't, you know, I'd never done it before. And so I didn't feel like I really should be embracing here or anything like that. But I think it just turned the lens on the psychological aspect of it all, which was really interesting. And it was doubly interesting, I think, with the film aspect because, you know, I mean, live theater and opera, especially compared to movies or Netflix or whatever you're watching, the style of delivery is so different. And so it was interesting just as a performer to consider how I could show different or try to show different things with literally just my eyes showing. and so there were a lot of challenges, but welcome challenges for that. But yeah, I think the main thing was that it just, it turned it into a inward psychological desire thing, which I like to, I don't know, I'm sort of a high octane performer, my whole body gets into it, and you know, and so I enjoy that. I enjoy trying to, the challenge of trying to show restraint or trying to show you know, inertia or gravity towards somebody and then not being able to really make that happen. I like it. I like a challenge.
I think one of the greatest say again.
I like to do the opposite of what I'm supposed to do.
Well, and you know, I was just about to ask, one of the most challenging moments for us as we were rehearsing this was this very clear textual reference to Kiss Me, Baccia Me.
Yeah.
And here we are, and that is not something you can do in the days of COVID. And then we came up with this invention of this kiss. Do you remember that moment and how did it feel?
I do remember. I, you know, and halfway through the run, I wonder which take is going to make the cut. But we, you and I, during a performance, you were like, hey, you should try it this way. And it was the last three performances or so. And I really liked the moment. And I thought it was really sweet. And I think, you know, the audience reaction was, you could feel people, but then you said something to me, and I don't even remember what it was. We added a beat, we added a stop time or something like that where I didn't go to her, and then I did that instead. And that changed everything for the audience. I mean, the audience after that, you could hear them. I mean, it caused applause, I think. I think the last three or four performances, the audience, after you made that change, the audience, man, really just snapped into it with us. And so I think it worked both ways, and it was really, really interesting. And really,
I think what was so touching about it is that what came across,
yeah,
was that you guys wanted to kiss each other so badly. And when she says, "Baccia me, see, baccia me," you start going toward each other, and then you stop because you realize you can't kiss.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? You do whatever is left. And you blow a kiss because that's what's left. And I think that really got to people's hearts because they know what that means, what is left.
That's true. Yeah, everyone's very familiar with the limits and the boundaries and doing what you can do. And yeah, it was a really nice moment. I look forward to every moment on stage with Talese, but it was nice to do every night.
This guy's smooth. Now that reminds me of Kevin Burdett told the company a story about Itzhak Perlman. I don't know if, I'm sure you all heard that story because it kind of became the ethos of the company. And the story, for those who haven't heard the story, is that Itzhak Perlman was in a performance in the 90s in Avery Fisher Hall, and he sits down and he starts big concerto, he's the star. And the first thing that happens is that the violin string pops and he's left with three strings. And he has a couple of choices. He can get up and change it, or he can stay, or, and he was thinking very quickly, and he realized, you know, as a child, he had polio and he is limited in his movement. And he made the decision right there that he's not going to get up and he's going to just play the whole concerto with three strings. And what happened that night was incredible, because he modulated up and down the octave, created new melodies, new harmonies, just, and it was beautiful and was riveting, and the audience was completely glued to it. And they all erupted at the end of the performance and big applause. And Perlman gets up and he says, "Sit down. Sometimes it is the job of the artist to make music with what he has left." And that kind of became the ethos of the company, because I feel like here we are in a baseball field behind masks, social distancing, behind those vinyl barriers, with planes over our heads, mosquitoes, hurricanes, flies, you name it, and we're making music. Ugh. Right? And so when you think about this, Talese, I'm curious about you walking from your dressing rooms in a university gym into the tent in the rain. How does it feel?
In an umbrella skirt?
Umbrellas, right? Costumes. There's this great photo of you trying to fix the boots, right? How did it feel? Why did you do it?
I mean, I'm a Girl Scout, first of all. And so, I don't know, that stuff didn't seem that foreign to me. I was happy to do it. I mean, we were putting on a show. I mean, I also sing, I mean, the flip side of the rep that I sing is that I sing this like crazy contemporary work as well. So nothing like walking onto a baseball field with wellies just trying to get to my job, that actually didn't seem that strange. It was actually kind of nice, because I think that is the part of our world that people don't see. That's the fourth wall. So they don't really see how it all happens. I mean, when most people go, "Oh, you're an opera singer?" Like they're shocked that we move in the world and buy groceries and pick up our kids and clean toilets like everyone else. So I was actually pleased to get rid of that that facade. I mean, because it wasn't anything out of the ordinary that we wouldn't do backstage. You just don't get to see it. I mean, but we always go through great lengths to put on a show, and then the audience gets to see, you know, all the smoke and mirrors and this beautiful part. But what is amazing about what we do is all the moving parts that happen backstage. I've always said that someone should write an opera about what happens before the opera actually happens. I mean, from when you walk in the door, stage door, with your, you know, from parking your car, and you're like, "Hey, Joe, hey," you know, and you walk in, and it's like from the stage door guy to the stage hand to the person who's just filling, you know, the coffee filter backstage for people to get tea and things. There's so many moving parts which make our job amazing. And I was kind of, I mean, we're in a pandemic. Everything is turned on its head. And I just thought, you know what? For me, I've always thought that there's this disconnect from the world and opera that keeps us from moving forward. It's the reason why Renee sang in the church service before and wasn't on television, but Lady Gaga and Jitten, no offense, but why wasn't there an opera singer singing in this time when we all voted him in and we were so proud and we knew that we needed this change? Why wasn't there an opera singer there on stage? And I think it is the disconnect, the not understanding the importance, the value that we bring to the culture of our society. And people are only beginning to realize, wow, life is really not right without music and theater. And they don't really know what it takes to put that on. And now we've opened up this situation where people can see the costs of what we give to them so that they can have this wonderful experience. I liked it. I mean, even as we were walking off stage, they were like, thank you so much. Or people would run up and say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to get too close, but I just want to say thank you so much. I mean, you couldn't do that in the theater. You know, there'd be a hard stop. They'd be standing out in the rain, praying that we left that exit, you know, and maybe we wouldn't, because maybe in past we avoided that. But I think now everyone is so open about what the arts bring to our society. I mean, a culture is only as rich as its art and its history. And I like that people got to see what it is that we do, who we are. And we're not just standing on stage singing some archaic aria. I mean, right. We literally turned opera on its head. And I thought it was perfect that they saw it all.
Yeah. Well said, well said. And so breaking those barriers, breaking those boundaries is what really differentiated what we did from everything else. Yeah. And talk about differentiating everything. Meg Marino, you sang a role that is typically not sung by a lady. This is meant for a tenor. And here you are completely creating something new and inventing this character that is so fascinating and touching. You want to tell us a little bit about how you came up with this Beppe?
Sure. I mean, well, it was easy because there were really well-informed, well-studied folks who were willing to play yes and with me all the time. Our whole cast is full of really, really wonderful people who had very, very distinctive ideas about their characters. So as a person who plays a lot of compromario roles or secondary roles, a lot of what I'm doing is helping to tell everybody else's story. And so when they come to the table with such distinctive ideas about what's going on, it's very easy for me to then be like, okay, this idea, as you guys have worked with me, I mean, how many times am I like, I'm gonna try this thing, and then it gets thrown out, but it's like, keep that little part, you know? I just love the aspect of playing. And so having said all of that, you know, having, it just kind of all fell in line, you know? I mean, Talise and I kind of developed a little, almost like Countess Carabino flirtation going on. And even because I sang most of the part up the octave from where it's written and originally in tenor clef, a couple lines we sing together, I would start it up the octave and then I would weave down to where it was originally written. And it was so fun to actually hear some of those lines and to sing them in that very close harmony, which then made me be like, okay, so when are we gonna do, Countess Carabino or even Countess Susanna, I'll sing your Susanna. But yeah, so there was like, that was really fun. And then also just kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Because so much of my role was more observing what was happening, you know? I got to really flex those, my roots are in theater first. So I got to really flex those moments like Joseph was talking about, knowing that the camera's in your face and that we're not playing to, you know, the opera houses that we've been, the stages we've been trained to play on, you know, like get your emotions and all the things out there for the whole world to see to the very back of the house, you know, in this, the camera's right there. So you can, I mean, and all we have are our eyes. So it's like the tiniest movement was that I found that to be so interesting. And also how we would all use our bodies was very much more in play, because we didn't have our whole faces and we didn't have, you know, some of the basic, more traditional operatic tropes of like, now I'm going to sing an aria. This is out of time. I will stand and be beautiful. Listen to the sounds coming out of my face hole. Sorry, I had to say it again. But you know what I mean? Like, and because the audience, even though we had plenty of distance around us, they were close enough that they could, I mean, in some cases, probably smell us. You know what I mean? That it's, you can't be big like that. You have to really find those moments to be a real human being who just happens to be in a very strange.
You can run, but you cannot hide.
Yeah, totally. So anyway, I just found all of, I mean, it was just, I thought it was going to be a bigger deal to be this particular version of this character than it actually was. It felt so natural. And like I said, because everybody else's story was so specific. And since, and your ideas too, Tomer, were very specific about certain moments that you really wanted, that it was so easy to connect the dots and just kind of, you know, do the thing.
Thank you. I wanted to say what ideas, but I just decided to say thank you. But you know, it's, what's interesting about COVID is that it taught the world so much, like this terrible crisis. It became a catalyst for so many new things. I mean, think about it. Just the digital world is completely different. Look at what we're doing right now. And recently the head of Microsoft said something that kind of stuck with me. He said that we took an advancement of 2 years in technology and had it in 2 months, right? And the same thing, so many new ideas emerged out of COVID, like this company of players. We had Zoom stagings that I found to be so valuable because you can talk about things before you're in the space and it's distracting. And what are some of the lessons for you all? I know it's a time that we'd like to forget, probably a lot of the spirit would like to forget. But when you think of the lessons moving forward, specifically in operas, because there can be all kinds of lessons, what are your lessons? As a farewell question.
I'm just going to jump in and say the Zoom rehearsal should remain as a thing we all do. Because checking in like that, even for half hour to an hour, at the beginning of the day, before we get into the room together, made the time so much more efficient and organized even, you know?
I'm going to be vulnerable and tell you that it's not easy for directors to have that, because then you actually have to prepare. So you actually have to have ideas other than come to rehearsal and go, well, what do you think? What do you want to do? And actually, I think that's a good thing. That is a good thing, because we really prepared a lot for this and then had to change a lot, because what you have on paper is never what's going to happen in reality. But going back into the question, other than Zoom, what are your lessons?
I think that we need to capitalize on thinking outside of the box. I think it's essential for the industry to move forward. I don't think that we're going back to March 16th at all. In the famous words of AOC, we're not going back to brunch. So I think that we're definitely on the right path. And I hope that we, in general, the industry will take up this lead that we've had and we just keep going with it, because we have so much more to, excuse me, to compete with now in general, if we want to be prevalent. And I think that we're certainly on the right path here.
I agree. One of the things that I thought was nice about this whole situation was, I mean, with the company of players and everything and the hometown connection, is just sort of this idea of investment in a community. And I think one of the things that of the world before, you know, it was sort of an interchangeable paper doll thing where you want the Russian soprano to fly in and do this, and you want, you know, and I think it's much more valuable for us, more rewarding for us. I think it gives us a wider range of possibilities artistically, and I think it gives a community something to really get behind, really sink their teeth into, really, really develop a relationship with, for us to be sort of a group and the same people and from the places that they go and go to the coffee shops that they go to. And so I think the investment in the community aspect of this is something that we really shouldn't do away with if we ever go back to real brunch.
we'll go back to brunch. I don't know if it's going to be real.
Well, I was going to say, one of the things that I have picked up for life that also has translated into work is being grateful and having appreciation, just gratitude and appreciation, even from companies that sometimes, I'll say it, sometimes people take their singers for granted. Sometimes they take their crew for granted, and having to see what all it takes just for their singers to come in and work and really appreciating the effort that they put into what you do. And also, for as a singer, sometimes, you know, we can complain about rehearsals and things, but I sit back and I'm like, I have one of the best jobs in the world. I get paid to sing and to listen to people sing. I mean, I can complain if I want, but I mean, what a better job than the, like, you can't find a better job than just listening to glorious music and getting paid for it. So I think being incredibly grateful for the opportunities that we have to share music, to share life, and to share love and our experiences is something that we all need to continue to take with us, but also the appreciation for our artists, the appreciation for our art, the appreciation for our companies and the people that make up our companies, not just the ones that we kind of see all the time, but, you know, the person that does the scheduling, your hair and makeup people. I mean, I think there's a great appreciation and a great debt of gratitude that we all owe to each other. And I think it's something that we need to hold close to us as we move forward.
Reggie, 2024 president. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
It'll be catered by Popeye's chicken. I'm just kidding. That's awesome.
Okay, I'm out.
But those that know me know that's true.
I'm in. Trey, any thoughts before we...
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the biggest one for me was very close to what Reggie was just talking about. It was the as a singer, sometimes you sing your role and you go home and the crew is there until 4 a.m. and you know they're there till 4 a.m. changing the set, doing all of the things, but everything was so much more transparent. The wig and makeup was right next to the costumes and you literally saw all of this stuff happening in real time and the work that it takes, because sometimes, especially when you're in the house, you're in your own little cell block of torturing yourself with high notes before you go on stage. And a lot of that was completely removed. And so we're all up in the field house having a good time with each other, but you're also knowing you see the crew in weathered outfits being soaking wet. I mean, there were multiple shows where I was handed props by a soaking wet person. And they were not complaining. They were just standing there ready to do their job. And I think most singers and opera people understand that part of the thrill and allure of opera is the totality of art and the various artists that are necessary for opera to come to full fruition. But I just think this took it to a whole different level, because there is no compartmentalization of the artists and multiple floors of artists. We are all sharing one baseball field and one gymnasium. And in a way that made it, the medium, I felt like everyone was able to express through the same medium in such a magnified way.
It was band camp.
All right, Trey, 2028 for president after Reggie.
This is no Popeyes though.
No Popeyes, okay. All right.
Can I piggyback on what everybody said?
Yeah, please.
There are a few other things I think that are bigger that also we all touched on, is that we don't need a traditional theater to do the thing. As long as you just have the space and the crew, you can do it. And a good song is a good song is a good song. It doesn't matter who's singing it. It doesn't matter what, you know, what their gender is, what octave it's in, what key it's been transposed into. A good song is a good song. And that also means like the entire opera, you know, rip it apart, put it in different orders, you know, whatever. However, I mean, like we had the chorus virtually and a little bit of it was cut out, but we made that work. You know, we cut out little portions of things to make sure we fit it in the right amount of time so that everybody would be safe. But it is still a good song. You know, so I don't know.
I'm so happy that all of you are completely on the same page in terms of of the vision of this whole festival. You know that the film that we're going to share in the next couple of days, Pagliacci, starts with a quote by Bertolt Brecht, who's the person that we are like honoring this whole season, because he said, if the bounds of opera cannot accommodate the theater of the time, those bounds must be broken. And that's, I feel like that's exactly what we're doing, just breaking all those bounds of what people think opera is. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for not being divas, for being real people, for being a part of this amazing thing. This is a document for years to come, for decades to come, that is going to be there. And you are a huge part of it. For my opening night gift, I received a note from Jim Maltman, our juggler. And in it, he said, you know, in the theater, we don't say goodbye. In the theater, we say, see you down the road. And I kept that gift from him because I really believe in that. So with this, it's been a pleasure to talk with you all. And it's not goodbye, but see you down the road. Thank you.
Thank you.